Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael reading the Midland Reporter Telegram, published Friday, October 1st, 2021. Front page. Permian Basin Petroleum Association Annual Meeting. Private Companies Know About Discipline, by Mella McEwen. In recent years, Tim Dunn, Chief Executive Officer of Crown Quest Operating, has seen public companies come under tremendous pressure to show capital discipline and return capital to investors. It's a philosophy private companies such as his impose on themselves because they're using their own capital, he said during a panel discussion to wrap up the Permian Basin Petroleum Association's annual meeting. He said, it's not fair public companies get all the blame for not making money earlier as they spend huge sums drilling new wells in the developing unconventional resource plays like the Permian Basin. No one held a gun to investors' heads and made them put $30 billion into the Marcellus, he said. It costs $20 million to drill a well, double production, the price falls and they're shocked and dismayed. Of course, he admitted, it is a two-person dance, and the operators took that money and drilled all those new wells. Dunn said when he recently spoke with investors, we told them they need to stop asking about individual well economics and start asking about last well economics. Agreed, Ken Beatty, Crown Quest Senior Vice President and Chief Operating Officer, you want that last well added to a development project to deliver strong economics. Asked by moderator Scott Kidwell, PBPA chairman, about the challenges currently facing the industry, Dunn said the industry has brought many of those challenges upon itself. Our product is so valuable and so transformative and has lifted so many people out of poverty, he said. It's such an integral part of life that people line up to buy it. We don't have to sell anything. We don't have to market it. As a result, the industry has allowed others to frame its work and products. The biggest direct risk for the industry on the horizon, he said, is if the oil business doesn't fight back. Asked about ESG, Dunn noted that his family bought and renovated the Green Acres miniature golf and entertainment complex. You can't get more social than that. As for governance, he estimated that almost all of Crown Quest's 250 employees are substantial owners of the company. Rather than focusing on how profitable an investment might be, he advised first considering if that investment will make up the community better. He pointed to Alley Village development and the development currently being planned by the Johnson family of Summit Petroleum and the Faskins as falling into that category. PBPA meeting focuses on the future. RRC chair says Texas regulators want clean, cheap energy, by Mella McEwen. After moving its annual meeting online last year amid the COVID-19 pandemic, members of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association gathered at the Petroleum Club on Thursday for their 59th annual meeting. The meeting began in traditional fashion with its kickoff breakfast featuring Railroad Commission Chair Wayne Christian and Adrian Sandoval, director of New Mexico's Oil Conservation Division. Christian praised those in attendance for their work developing the tremendous oil resources, which he said some are estimating at 230 billion barrels, that the good Lord gave us. He credited the industry with not only helping allies win World War I and World War II, but improving life expectancy and greatly reducing environment-related deaths. Over the last 50 years, the nation's toxic gas emissions have fallen by 77%, according to the Environmental Protection Agency statistics, he said to applause from his audience. He decried the growth of investment in wind and solar power, pointing out that oil and gas wells can last 70 years and cost $15,000 to $20,000 to cap, while wind turbines last 10 to 15 years and cost $535,000 to take down. Christian expressed concern that the Biden administration wants to shut down an industry he said made the U.S. great. We're for clean, predictable, cheap energy. The oil and gas industry has made the U.S. the cleanest industrialized nation in the world, he stated. Shutting down the domestic energy industry would make the nation dependent on nations led by unstable governments who don't exert as much control over their environmental impact. The support for renewables and vilification of the oil and gas industry is based on false narratives, he said, in part because the industry needs to tell its story. It's as wrong to omit the truth as it is to do something wrong, he said. Sandoval praised the collaboration her agency received from the industry as new rules were crafted requiring the energy capture 98% of its natural gas emissions and barring the industry from venting and flaring gas except in emergencies. The stakeholder engagement in the issue could not be matched, she said. She added she is proud of the rule, which not only moves the state forward in meeting its climate goals, but helps the industry capture a sellable commodity. She stressed that the rule offers the industry flexibility. In the Northwest, we have a gas basin. In the Southwest, we have an oil basin, she observed. Reporting required quarterly reports on each side on meeting that goal is required. How you meet those goals is up to you. At the end of the day, we all want to see the same goal. She urged anyone with questions or problems to contact her agency. We can't understand the problem if you don't come to us, she said. It's easier to address an issue before it becomes a problem. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick says Texas Senate needs expert in oil and gas, by Caitlin Randall. During his keynote speaker address during the annual Permian Basin Petroleum Association annual meeting, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick said what's missing from the Texas Senate is a senator who's an expert in oil and gas operations. We have doctors, we have too many lawyers, but we don't really have any oil men or women, Patrick said. He said there's a large amount of interest in the state legislature because of the upcoming 2022 elections. Representative Tom Craddock has been the heart and soul of your industry forever, and thank goodness for Tom, but he's in the House, Patrick said to attendees of the PBPA meeting. We really haven't had a senator who's an oil and gas person, and I think it's important for your industry these days. If not in the industry, then someone who's going to be all for the industry. The lieutenant governor added that without someone who's an oil and gas expert in the Senate, other senators don't hear from those who understand the industry when making decisions. Senator Kel Seliger, whose district includes the Permian Basin, has a background in steel and is the co-owner of Lake Steel Incorporated. Patrick and Seliger have had a publicly tense relationship. In 2009, Patrick removed Seliger as chair of the Agricultural Committee after Seliger suggested one of Patrick's female staffers. Patrick removed Seliger as chair of the Agricultural Committee after Seliger suggested one of Patrick's female staffers should kiss his backside. Patrick said Thursday that although oil is now at $75 a barrel, the oil and gas industry is under siege. He spoke about the successful passage of Senate Bill 13, which requires state entities to divest from companies that boycott fossil fuel companies. It basically says if you're going to boycott the oil and gas industry, then we're not putting our money with you, he said, noting that the state of Texas has a $125 billion annual budget. Patrick also used his keynote address as an opportunity to attack President Joe Biden, particularly the Biden administration's response to the crisis at the U.S.-Mexico border. He said that Border Patrol agents usually apprehend about 400,000 individuals a year at the border, but that number is expected to be about 2 million this year. Regarding former Representative Beto O'Rourke mulling a run against Governor Greg Abbott, Patrick said he would be happy if O'Rourke entered the race so voters could get rid of him once and for all. Fall Roundup. Don't miss Halloween and fall events this month, by J.C. Lewis. Here is a list of events happening in October that will bring out the fall spirit. Check out Miss Casey's for a pumpkin patch with photo opportunities. The shop is open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday, and from 2 to 5 p.m. Sunday. Don't forget to pick up pumpkins at Fiddlesticks Farms. Its pumpkin patch and corn maze is open every Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sunday 1 to 6 p.m. in October at 5610 East County Road 120. West Texas Fest benefits the Ella Noel Art Museum. Experience local food trucks, Texas country music, cornhole tournament, Texas beer, spirit, and wine tastings. West Texas Fest starts at 7 p.m. Friday at the Midland Shooters Association Shotgun Range. Tickets start at $50. Tall City Brewing Oktoberfest will be all weekend long at Tall City Brewing Company. The event will feature fun games, discounts on beers, and German-inspired dishes from local food trucks. There will be a new beer release, Das Boot, and merch. Oktoberfest begins at noon Friday and ends at 6 p.m. Sunday. A 15-hour dance party fundraiser for The Rally Room, a nonprofit family entertainment center coming soon to Midland. The dance party will be from 9 a.m. to midnight Saturday in the exhibit hall at the Bush Convention Center. Low Mark Street Market provides a great opportunity to get started holiday shopping locally this year. Even though it's the fall, plan ahead to support small local businesses at markets like Low Saint Market. The event will be 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday by Centennial Park. Check out Low St. Brooks' Happy Hour from 2 to 5 p.m. Saturday, too. Select drinks and bites are $5. Mean Girls Drag Brunch will be an afternoon of gourmet brunch and drag queens. Special guest DJ Alex Shock will also be on site. The event is 21+. It will be noon to 4 p.m. Sunday at the Midland Beer Garden. Tickets are $25 in advance or $35 at the door. So Bell & Company Fall Marketplace is set for noon to 6 p.m. on October 8th and 9th to 6 p.m. October 9th. The Little Teeny Farm, almost 40 women-owned shops, will be available. The market supports Kaleidoscope Ministries. Boundless Art and the Expansive Eye opening reception from 5 to 9 p.m. on October 12th at Baker Shore Fine Art. The gallery features 20th century modern art with a focus on post-war American abstraction and contemporary art, including both 20th century works and works by current practicing artists. 2021 Permian Basin Food Truck Battle brings out the best of the best food trucks in the Permian Basin. It also benefits a great cause, the Midtown Soldiers Boxing Club. The event will also have live music by Youngblood's band. Diana D., Selena Tribute, and her band Drive Band EPT, and Garden Grove A Tribute to Sublime. The event is October 15th and 16th at the Bush Tennis Center. Oktoberfest 2021 is scheduled for Hotel Settles in Big Spring. Even though it might be a bit of a drive, don't miss this family-friendly entertainment. There will be delicious food and drinks, live music, local vendors, a costume contest, kids games, mini gold, and more. The event is 6 to 10 p.m. October 16th at Hotel Settles. Cinema Under the Stars will feature Hocus Pocus. Enjoy free popcorn. Kendra Scott will be on location selling jewelry, and Olympus Properties will be sharing information about their three Midland and Odessa apartment properties. Food trucks will be parked outside from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. The fun will start at 7 p.m. October 20th at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Tickets are $5 or free for UTPB staff and students. Dress to the nines for a masquerade party. Fur Ball, benefiting Midland Humane Coalition, is set for 6 p.m. to midnight on October 30th at the Petroleum Club. The 10th annual fundraiser will include dinner, open bar, live music by West Texas Funk, and a live and silent auction. Halloween Fun. The Midland YMCA will be hosting a Halloween carnival. The Midland Y Halloween Carnival will feature face painting, obstacle courses, and live music by Jesse Jennings. Disney characters and superheroes will also be attending. Tickets are $5 per person in advance or $10 at the door. The event is from 4 to 8 p.m. October 23rd at 800 North Big Spring Street. Trunk or Treat with the Midland Fire Department will be 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. October 23rd at Central Fire Station. Trunk or Treat at the Episcopal Church will be 5:30 to 7 p.m. October 27th at 1501 Ohio Street. It is a free family event with hot dogs, candy, bounce houses, balloons, and a cakewalk. Canned good items will be donated to the Jubilee Center of Midland. Halloween Fest will be 6 to 8 p.m. October 28th at Martin Luther King Park. The Studio by Kids Canvas is hosting Trick or Treat. The event is a safe place to bring kids for trick or treat during the day. They can create a work of art, participate in a costume contest, games, and more. The event is from noon to 4 p.m. October 31st at 3211 West Wadley Avenue. Woman who survived 1918 flu succumbs to COVID-19 by Todd Richmond, Associated Press. She lived a life of adventure that spanned two continents. She fell in love with a World War II fighter pilot, barely escaped Europe ahead of Benito Mussolini's fascists, ground steel for the U.S. war effort, and advocated for her disabled daughter in a far less enlightened time. She was, her daughter said, someone who didn't make a habit of giving up. And then this month, at age 105, Primetta Giacopini's life ended the way it began, in a pandemic. I think my mother would have been around quite a bit longer if she hadn't contracted COVID, her 61-year-old daughter, Doreen Giacopini, said. She was a fighter. She had a hard life, and her attitude always was, basically all Americans who were not around from World War II were basically spoiled brats. Primetta Giacopini's mother, Pasquina Fay, died in Connecticut of the flu in 1918 at age 25. That flu pandemic killed about 675,000 Americans, a death toll eclipsed this month by the 2020-2021 coronavirus pandemic. Primetta was 2 years old when her mother died. Her father, a laborer, didn't want to raise Primetta or her younger sister, Alice. He sent Alice back to Italy, their ancestral homeland, and handed Primetta to an Italian foster family that then relocated to Italy in 1929. The way Mom talked about it, he didn't want to raise those kids alone, and men didn't do that time, Doreen recalled. It's ridiculous to me. Primetta supported herself by working as a seamstress. Raven-haired, with dark eyes and sharp features, she eventually fell in love with an Italian fighter pilot named Vittorio Andriani. I didn't see too much of him because he was always fighting someplace, Primetta told the Golden Gate Wing, a military aviation club in Oakland, California, in 2008. Italy entered World War II in June 1940. The local police wanted Primetta to leave because Mussolini wanted American citizens out of the country. Primetta refused. Several weeks later, the state police told her to get out, warning her that she could end up in a concentration camp. In June 1941, Adriani was missing in action. Primetta learned later that he had crashed and died near Malta. While he was missing, she joined a group of strangers making their way out of Italy on a train to Portugal. In Spain, one can still see, after 2 to 3 years, the traces of the atrocities of the past, Primetta wrote in a letter to a friend in the midst of her flight. At Port Bou, the Spanish border, not one house is left standing. Everything got destroyed because the town is an important train transit point that brought supplies to the Reds, the enemy. I've seen so much destruction that I've had enough. The day after tomorrow, I get on the ship, and I'm sure all will go well. In Lisbon, she boarded a steamer bound for the United States. She returned to Torrington, bought a Chevrolet sedan for $500, and landed a job at the General Motors plant in Bristol, grinding steel to cover ball bearings for the war effort. She met her husband, Umbert Giacopini, on the job. They stayed married until he died in 2002. Primetta gave birth to Doreen in 1960 and received devastating news. The infant had been born with spina bifida, a birth defect in which the spinal cord doesn't fully develop. For the first 50 years of her life, Doreen needed crutches to walk. Worried that Doreen would slip during Connecticut's winters, the family moved to San Jose in 1975. "My folks were born a long time ago," she said. "Their attitude about disability and my mother's attitude about disability was, it was lucky I was smart and I should get a good job I really liked because I probably wouldn't be getting married or have children. They did not take parenting classes." It's Flu Vaccine Time, Even If You've Had Your COVID Shots, by Lauren Neergaard, AP medical writer. Amid all the focus on the COVID-19 vaccinations, U.S. health experts have another plea. Don't skip your flu shot. Flu cases have dropped to historically low levels during the pandemic. The U.S. and Europe experienced hardly any flu last winter, and the Southern Hemisphere just ended its second flu season of the coronavirus pandemic with little to report. But with U.S. schools and businesses reopened, international travel resuming, and far less masking this fall, flu could make a comeback. The big question is whether it will trickle in or roar back and put extra pressure on hospitals already struggling with COVID-19 surges. "People are sick to death of hearing about having to roll on out and get vaccines of any sort," said flu specialist Richard Webby of St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Memphis. "Yet after 18 months of little influenza exposure, we probably, as a population, don't have as much immunity against the virus as we typically might," Webby said. "It makes absolute sense to go on out and get that vaccine and at least prepare for something that, you know, could be quite severe." Here are some things to know. Who should get a flu vaccine? The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says that just about everybody needs an annual flu vaccination, starting with six-month-old babies. Influenza is most dangerous for adults over 65, young children, pregnant women, and people with certain health conditions, such as heart or lung disease. "Why do I need one this year, since the flu hasn't been a threat during the pandemic?" COVID-19 restrictions, including masking and staying home, especially for children, who are flu's biggest spreaders, clearly had a side benefit of tamping down influenza and other respiratory bugs. But as soon as masks started to come off, the U.S. experienced an unusual summer surge of children hospitalized with a different virus named RSV that usually strikes in the winter. That's a worrying sign of what to expect if flu returns. What's the forecast for flu this winter? Flu is notoriously difficult to predict, but there's a little more circulating in some countries this fall than last, including a recent uptick in China, said Webby, who directs a World Health Organization flu center. And people may be a little more vulnerable. Before the pandemic, 15% to 30% of the population was exposed to flu each year, a missing bump in immunity, he said. If flu does at least get a foothold in, it's going to have more opportunity of spreading this season, he said. When should I get a flu vaccine? Now. The CDC encourages people to get their vaccine by the end of October. Doctors' offices, retail pharmacies, and local health departments have millions of doses in hand, and most Americans with health insurance can get it with no copay. "I already got a COVID-19 vaccine. Do I really need a flu shot too?" COVID-19 vaccines prevent the coronavirus, and flu vaccines prevent influenza. They don't overlap. But you can catch both viruses at the same time, or one after the other. Avoid the double whammy and get both vaccines, advised the American College of Emergency Physicians. For now, COVID-19 vaccines are available for anyone 12 and older. Flu vaccines aren't as powerful as vaccines against some other diseases, but if people do get influenza anyway, they tend to have a much milder illness. Can I get a flu vaccine and a COVID-19 vaccine at the same visit? Yes. The CDC says it's fine to pair a flu vaccine with either a primary COVID-19 shot or a booster dose. What's the best flu vaccine to get? Flu constantly evolves, and this year's vaccine is made to fight the strains that international experts deem most likely to circulate. This year, all of the flu vaccines offered in the U.S. offer protection against all four of those strains. Options include traditional shots or a nasal spray vaccine. Project Literacy provides books, author visits, by J.C. Lewis. Community partners are teaming up to promote literacy and a lifelong love of reading. This year marks the 11th anniversary of Project Literacy, a collaborative initiative that features school programs, author visits, and book signings for the public. Wells Fargo, Midland County Public Library Foundation, the Midland Reporter Telegram, Midland ISD, Basin PBS, and Midland County Public Libraries are working together for this year's events. Headlining author Raoul III will be the special guest at a Project Literacy celebration Monday at this year's host school, Washington STEM Academy. Representatives from Wells Fargo and MISD will also speak at the celebration, according to a news release. Raoul III and author-illustrator Evan Turk will present in-person author talks at Bowie Fine Arts Academy's auditorium Monday through Wednesday. Young adult author Jonathan Oxy will present two virtual programs October 7th for MISD fifth graders. Project Literacy kicked off this week when volunteer readers began arriving on campuses across Midland to read the bilingual children's book, Vamos, Let's Go to the Market, by Raoul III. Every first grader will receive a copy of the book to keep, and each first grade teacher will receive a classroom copy. Second grade classrooms will receive Vamos, Let's Go to the Market, along with The People's Painter, How Ben Shahn Fought for Justice with Art, by Cynthia Levinson, and illustrated by Evan Turk. Fifth grade classrooms will receive a copy of Jonathan Oxier's Sweep. MISD elementary school libraries will receive copies of all three books. Project Literacy includes opportunities for the community to meet the authors. Raoul III will be at the downtown library for an art talk from 5 to 6:30 p.m. Monday. Both Raoul III and Evan Turk will participate in book signings at Centennial Library following their school visits. The book signings are free and open to the public. Books will be available to purchase on-site from Barnes & Noble booksellers. Midland Reporter-Telegram obituaries published Friday, October 1st. Cynthia K. Cornelius. Cynthia K. Cornelius was born October 4th, 1954, in Midland, Texas, to Bryant T. and Maggie L. Cornelius in Midland, Texas. She was preceded in death by her parents and her sister, Demita Sue Cornelius. Cynthia deeply loved her family and friends and will be truly missed. To cherish her memory, she leaves her sister, Mary Angela Phelps, and husband Cleveland of Duncanville, Texas. Niece Chelsea A. Phelps of Duncanville, nephews Bryant X. Phelps and wife Courtney of Grand Prairie, Zurich C. Phelps of Dallas, and Evan C. Phelps of Duncanville. Funeral services for Cynthia will be held Saturday, October 2nd at 10 a.m. at St. Paul United Methodist Church, 1816 Ralph Street, Dallas, Texas, 75201. CDC protocols will be observed and the service will be live streamed. In lieu of flowers or plants, donations can be made to St. Paul United Methodist Church. Death Notice. Diego Francisco Anaya III. Diego Francisco Anaya III, infant, passed away Monday, September 27th, 2021. Rosary will be Sunday, October 3rd at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. A funeral mass will be Monday, October 4th at 10 a.m. at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. He is survived by his four brothers, Ismael Torres, Forrest Torres, Jaden Anaya, and Giovanni Sanchez. One sister, Arabella Torres. Grandparents, Jose Angel Martinez, Maria Martinez, Diego Anaya, and Maria Anaya.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, October 1st, 2021. Maintaining the tax rate, tailgate on tap. Keeping the total tax rate the same, paying off bonds early, and the upcoming tailgate party celebrating the 100th birthday of Ector County ISD. In his media call Wednesday, Superintendent Scott Murray said the ECSID Board of Trustees voted to keep the tax rate the same at a total of $1.17 per $100 valuation. The Texas legislature compressed school districts' tax rates a few years ago. Quote, they've done that for the past 3 years. So I commend the Board of Trustees for their good stewardship of our dollars and for making a wise decision on keeping the tax rate the same. That will allow ECISD to continue to do the good work that we do to make sure that we're providing quality education for our students, end quote, Murray said. In addition, at the last school board meeting, trustees voted to prepay some of the district's bonds to pay them off a little bit early. Quote, in fact, we're going to pay off about $5.5 million worth of bonds. The good news comes from the amount of interest savings that will take place. We will save $2.5 million in interest payments by paying off that $5.5 million in bonds many years early. So again, due to the good stewardship of our trustees, we were able to pay those bonds off early and then save the taxpayers $2.5 million over the life of those bonds, end quote, Murray said. On the celebration, Murray said the district is inviting everyone to Ratliff Stadium starting at 4:30 p.m. October 8th. There will be food trucks from around the Permian Basin, Murray said. A concert with Permian and Odessa High School students will be held, followed by the Gatlin Brothers. Quote, the Grammy Award-winning Gatlin Brothers will be live on stage on that Friday night, sharing their incredible musical talent, end quote, Murray said. Quote, as many of you know, the Gatlin Brothers are sons of ECISD. They were part of our community for many years and have gone on to experience great fame in the music world and will be sharing their talents with us that night, end quote. Festivities before the football game are free, but there will be a charge for the game, which starts at 7 p.m. October 8th. The evening will conclude with a drone show. Quote, some school districts will conclude a special event with fireworks, but we're going to kind of one-up that opportunity. We have a really exciting opportunity with drone technology coming in to provide a closing activity that evening for the entire community. That will be a pretty fun display, end quote, Murray said. Asked about the COVID tests ECISD was expecting from the state, Murray said they have not received the rapid tests yet, so students and staff are not being tested with them. Recognizing greatness. OC names track for legendary coach. The community came together Thursday at Odessa College to break ground on the James Segrest Stadium, named for the college's legendary track coach, and officially launching the $6.5 million capital campaign for the new complex, which will replace the current OC outdoor track area. Segrest, who lives in Granbury, and several of the athletes that ran for him were present at the site just outside the sports center, along with city, OC, chamber officials, and other community dignitaries. Segrest served as the Odessa College track and field coach from 1973 to 1987, and from 1994 to 1995. He was also OC athletic director from 1987 to 1994, Vice President for Student Services Kim McKay said. Odessa Mayor Javier Jovan read a proclamation marking September 30th as James Segrest Day. Phase one of the project will include replacing the track with an eight-lane blue track, replacing the grass field with a turf multipurpose field, Vice President of Administrative Services Ken Zartner said. quote, we plan to close the track starting Monday, October 11th, so the construction can begin, and plan to complete Phase 1 by March 2022, end quote, Zartner said. Phase 2 will include grandstands that can seat up to 400 people on each side, a grand entrance with a box office and concession stand, new fencing, restrooms, and a scoreboard. Zartner said the facility will allow Odessa College to bring back a competitive track and field program. Quote, it will allow us to host UIL, NJCAA track and field meets, youth football, soccer games, and so much more, end quote, Zartner said. Zartner said it was a pleasure to meet Segrest. Quote, from the second I stepped on this campus, one of the first things that I saw were all those banners, and that's where I really learned of the legend of the coach, end quote, Zartner said. Quote, this was the place where Friday Night Lights first began in Odessa, Texas, at the old W.T. Barrett Stadium, which was built in 1948, the largest stadium at the time between El Paso and Abilene. A cinder track was installed in 1950, making it the only one of its kind in West Texas. W.T. Barrett Stadium was located on the Odessa College campus from 1948 to 1982, when Ratliff Stadium first opened, end quote, Zartner added. The stadium was removed and sold to Leander ISD in 1983, he added. OC opened the Sports Center track in 1984 and has been home to some of the greatest NJCAA track athletes. The Sports Center serves 7,000 students, close to 8,000 this fall, and more than 2,000 community members, McKay said. Quote, this outdoor track is a popular venue for local sports organizations, families, and fitness enthusiasts to walk, run, train, and practice. The college plans to incorporate community health, wellness, and fitness into the new strategic master plan, Vision 2030 Plus. This plan includes new campus walking trails. This morning, we celebrated the transition to Wrangler Trails, a one-third mile loop in the heart of the Odessa College campus. It will include outdoor fitness stations, is ADA compliant, is accessible from both the north and south parking lots, and will provide a safe, well-lit walking trail for all of our walkers. Wrangler Trail is open today, and there are signs on light poles and sidewalks that will help you find your way, end quote, McKay said. About $2 million of a $7 million donation OC received in June from Mackenzie Scott will be used for the new venue. Athletic Director Wayne Baker said he first had a chance to meet Coach Segrest in the 1980s. Baker said as a young man, kept hearing about the college athletic program and Segrest. Quote, when we talk about athletics, we're talking about a program with over 60 national championships and counting, many of them coming in the recent few years, end quote, Baker said. Segrest engineered 11 national titles in 6 years. Quote, so it ended up with indoor and outdoor track. They won 11 of the 12 national titles in that 1 6-year span, which is unparalleled in the history of the NJCAA that someone would win that many titles. Beyond the 11 titles, we couldn't even talk about how many conference and region championships the track and field program won. But I know they had well over 400 All-Americans. To the latest count, they have well over 100 individual national champions, have produced multiple Olympians, multiple national champions, and some that set world records, and today will have records that are in the top 5 or 10 in the world in their individual event, including John Drummond, who had many of those while Coach Segrest was here, end quote, Baker said. Quote, Coach Segrest has also had the position of athletic director, which I now have, so I know that I followed in big footsteps there that I had to come into and look at, end quote, Baker added. He said he's excited that OC will be able to bring track and field back. When he got to OC in 2009, Baker said President Gregory Williams had a vision to make OC's athletic department and facilities the best athletic program in the United States for two-year colleges. Quote, this is just another step in what we talked about clear back in 2009 to becoming the best athletic program in the United States for two-year colleges. And guys, we're getting there. We need to get back to the legacy of track and field that Coach Segrest produced, end quote, Baker said. Vice President of Advancement, Business and Governmental Relations, Jockey Gore, announced that ICA Properties has donated $250,000 to the stadium project. Quote, this brings us to 35% of our $6.5 million capital campaign goal. This amount joins Mackenzie Scott's special gift that we received back in June. We earmarked $2 million to this project, end quote, Gore said. She added that there are naming opportunities from $1,000 up to several million dollars to place your name on the project. Williams said naming the stadium for Coach Seagrass couldn't happen to a better person. Quote, some of you have known him for a number of years. I know his track athletes have known him for a few years, and he's probably a little nicer now than he was back then, end quote, Williams said. He added that he heard about Seagrass dropping track athletes somewhere and having them run back to campus. Quote, and guess what? It worked. My God, it worked, end quote, Williams said. He met Seagrass in the 90s as a young OC employee. Quote, and he had all these banners and he had all these awards. He had all these honors. And he treated me like I was special. And I was just a guy showing up on campus trying to do a job. But he treated me and everyone else the same. He loved everyone, very supportive. He's a gentleman, husband, and father, end quote, Williams added. Williams noted that Seagrass was a wonderful athlete himself who could win entire track meets. He added that when people are on the track, it doesn't matter what race, religion, or gender they are. Quote, that's why we love athletics so much. It's you versus the other person. It's you versus the clock. That's what it's all about, and that's what we stand for in America. That's what we stand for in Texas, and certainly that's what we stand for in West Texas, end quote, Williams said. Seagrass, who just lost his wife about 2 months ago, said having the stadium named for him was a tremendous honor. He later said he wished she could be there with him. Quote, any success I had was due to her support, end quote, he said. Quote, she went on most of the trips. She was the wind beneath my wings, and I miss her dearly. Most of all, I want to thank my Savior, Jesus Christ, end quote, Seagrass told the audience. He later said having the track named for him was hard to believe. Quote, it's such a great thing, end quote, Seagrass said. Ricky Santiago, who was on the track team from 1976 to 1979, said he and his fellow athletes live here, so they see each other a lot. Quote, but seeing Coach Seagrass, that brings back a lot of memories, a lot of good feelings, hard workouts. He would drop us off long distances over there by that overpass going toward Andrews. He would drop us off, and then we would run all the way to here. And then we still had to do 24 200s. Or he would take us out on that road going to Goldsmith, and he would drop us off and say, okay, see you guys in a little bit, end quote, Santiago said. They weren't terrified they wouldn't be able to make it back, but they wanted to meet Seagrass's expectations. Quote, he never raised his voice. He always talked in a fatherly tone. I've never ever seen him, never heard him raise his voice. He would get as nervous as he would in the meet. He would start throwing up because he was so nervous. But it was good, end quote, Santiago said. City legal bills top $143,000. Legal bills from the city of Odessa indicate that the city has now spent $143,899.04 on outside attorney fees in the more than a year and a half battle with the Odessa American over open records. A Freedom of Information request for the billing shows that Midland attorneys hired recently by the city have billed $31,760.57 since June. The city previously spent $112,138.47 on an Austin law firm before cutting ties with that firm last year. The city hired three Midland firms and has been billed Cotton Bledsoe, Teague, and Dawson, $11,068.82. Brockett and McNeil, $6,753. Keith Stretcher, $13,938.75. The litigation is pending, and in August, attorneys for the Odessa American and the City of Odessa agreed to spend the next 60 days trying to agree to the facts to be decided by a state district judge in the OA's ongoing open records lawsuit against the municipality. The agreement could speed up the one-and-a-half-year-old legal battle brought by the newspaper, alleging the city has violated the Texas Freedom of Information Act by delaying and or redacting police reports and probable cause affidavits, documents considered public information readily accessible to any member of the public. The latest legal twist came as both sides were scheduled to appear in a hearing Thursday before visiting Judge Rodney Satterwhite in the 161st State District Court in Odessa. Among the city's contentions is its assertion that it ought to be allowed to conduct discovery and depositions as part of its defense in the case. But lawyers for the newspaper argue that the decision is a matter of law that can be decided by the judge. Both sides met privately just before the start of the hearing at the Ector County Courthouse and then informed Satterwhite they would meet in the coming weeks to try and establish agreed-upon stipulations as to facts surrounding the case that could allow the judge to rule on the matter. Both sides will likely submit a joint fact-finding report to Satterwhite to consider prior to appearing before the judge on November 15th. Quote, it's a delay, but it's a way for both sides potentially to save money and streamline the legal questions to be decided by Judge Satterwhite, end quote, said John Busian, lead counsel for the OA. The city's new Midland-based legal team, hired by the city council in June, had indicated that they basically wanted to restart the case from scratch. The city cut ties with an Austin law firm last year during the heated city council races. Quick hits. Trade days. Briar Patch Trade Days has been scheduled from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday and from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Sunday at the Ector County Coliseum, Building D and E. Admission is free. Visit tinyurl.com/KXKT4KXS from staff reports. Man charged with assaulting woman. A 31-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly assaulted his unborn child's mother multiple times during the past 2 months. Nigel Gerald Johnson was charged with continuous violence against the family, a third-degree felony. He was also charged with manufacture or delivery of a controlled substance, a first-degree felony. The complainant, identified as Jordan Luna, stated her unborn child's father, Johnson, had assaulted her August 29th in the 1100 block of West 33rd Street. An Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit detailed. Luna reported the assault to OPD on August 30th. Luna reportedly had visible injuries to her face, red marks, and bleeding to her lip. Luna's injuries were consistent with her claim of assault. Luna told police prior to her arrival to OPD, an argument turned physical when Johnson followed her out of the home and began punching her in the face with a closed fist surrounding a post she made on social media, the probable cause affidavit stated. Children witnesses of the assault were reportedly identified and contacted, who confirmed that Luna was assaulted by Johnson the date of the report. The witnesses state that Johnson struck Luna in the face with a closed fist, causing bodily injury. Police reviewed past contacts with Luna that showed she had filed two previous cases of assault, family violence, by Johnson on August 12th and August 28th, the affidavit stated. Johnson was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on September 28th, jail records show. He has two bonds totaling $60,000 and was still in custody as of Thursday morning. Water tank raising in West Odessa. Ector County Utility District President Tommy Irvin announced via press release on Thursday that Landmark Construction will begin hoisting the steel tanks on their concrete water storage, symbolizing 6 years of planning to improve water service in West Odessa. Ector County Utility District reportedly contracted with Landmark Structures to construct two above-ground water storage tanks in West Odessa. The first tank at 1700 South Trip will be raised Thursday, and the second on Knox Avenue on October 1st. Each metal tank will take 6 to 7 hours to set into place, the press release detailed. The Trip storage tank will be 139 feet tall, while the Knox Avenue tank will be 142.6 feet high. Irvin stated in the press release, quote, both of these tanks represent significant improvements in ECUD water system serving West Odessa, end quote. Better operating pressures will benefit ECUD construction when the tanks go into service in 2022. Construction is reportedly funded by a low-interest rate loan from the Texas Water Development Board. ECUD expects completion of those two above-ground water storage tanks in 2022 and placement in service by the fall of 2022. Both above-ground storage tanks will be connected to a new pump station and 6.2 million gallons surface storage tank north of 42nd Street and Tripp Avenue, the press release stated. Upon completion of all the improvements, ECUD will be better prepared to serve West Odessa. Local News Roundup. Gun and Blade Show. Silver Spur Gun and Blade Show has been scheduled from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday at the Ector County Coliseum, Building G, 4205 Andrews Highway. Admission is $7 for adults and free for 12 and under, and $1 off NRA, TSRA, or military with ID, cash only. All law enforcement get in free with badge. Visit silverspurtradeshows.com/shows. Blessing of the Animals. St. Nicholas Episcopal Church, 4000 West Loop 250 North, Midland, has scheduled Blessing of the Animals in celebration of St. Francis of Assisi at 10 a.m. Saturday at the church courtyard. Father David Perdue will bless all pets, even beloved toy pets. Dogs must be leashed and cats in a carrier. The event is free and open to the public. For more information, call 432-694-8856. Who Let the Dogs Out? 5K. Fix West Texas has scheduled Who Let the Dogs Out? 5K Saturday. The race will begin at 6 p.m. and with awards at 7 p.m. at Torchy's Tacos, 306 East 5th Street. There will be live music, food, drinks, free pet photos, and costume contest following the race. Proceeds benefit Fix West Texas. To register or for more information, visit fixwesttexas.org. Pink Party. West Texas Gifts of Hope and the Fraternal Order of Eagles, number 2914, have scheduled Pink Party, October 9th, at 1344 East 7th Street. The event will include a barbecue, cook-off, cornhole tournament, pool tournament, various raffles, food trucks, car meet, and more. Barbecue entry fee is due by Saturday. Entrants can choose to make either pork spare ribs or chicken thighs at $25 or both for $40. Public plate sales will begin at 6:30 p.m. at $12 for single meat or $15 for combo plates. Cornhole team entry of two is $10 per person. Pool tournament entry fee is $20. Prizes will be awarded for all events. The event will benefit the West Texas Gifts of Hope. To donate or for more information, visit tinyurl.com/3654FRW6 or westtexasgiftsofhope.org or call 432-614-9284. Death Notices, Nora E. Cruz, Arizona. Nora E. Cruz, 48, of Odessa, died Friday, September 24th, 2021, in Arizona. Celebration of life will be held on Saturday, October 2nd, 2021, from 3 p.m. to 9 p.m., and 1 to 9 p.m., October 3rd, 2021, at Odessa Funeral Home Chapel. Arrangements are by Odessa Funeral Home, 7511 of Odessa. Enadina G. Garcia, Odessa. Enadina G. Garcia, 66, died Sunday, September 26th, 2021, in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Marta Magali Cavos Hernandez, Odessa. Marta Magali Cavos Hernandez, 69, of Presidio, died Sunday, September 26, 2021, in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 11:30 a.m. on Saturday, October 2nd, 2021, at Santa Teresa Catholic Church in Presidio. Burial will follow at Desert Hills Cemetery. Visitation will take place at Willow Brook Funeral Home in Midland on Friday, October 2nd, from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Arrangements are by Eternity Funeral Home of Fort Stockton. Obituaries. Maureen Stenen Anderson, Odessa. Maureen Stenen Anderson, 87, of Odessa, Texas, entered her eternal rest on Thursday, September 9th, 2021. Maureen was born in London, England on August 8th, 1934, to the late Marius Stenen and Lucille Layton Stenen. Maureen is preceded in death by her husband of 64 years, Peter. Marius Stenen, father. Lucille Stenen, mother. Francis Stenen, brother. David Layton Anderson, son. And Christina Marie Eloa Anderson, granddaughter. Maureen is survived by her brother, Julian Stenen, California. Children Carol Marie Brent of Gilbert, Arizona. Richard Lee Anderson of Tucson, Arizona. Peter Jerome Anderson of Dodge City, Kansas, and Laura Kristen Smiley Scott of Odessa, Texas, and daughter-in-law Sherry Aston Anderson of Orlando, Florida. She is also survived by 10 grandchildren, 9 great-grandchildren, and a number of nieces and nephews. A memorial service will be held Saturday, October 2nd, 2021 at 10 a.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. In lieu of flowers, the family wishes you to consider making a memorial donation to the Nature Conservancy in her honor. Jaciel Asbel Gonzalez, Odessa. Jaciel Asbel Gonzalez went to be with his Lord and Savior Jesus Christ on Sunday, September 26, 2021. He was born on August 13, 1992, in Odessa, Texas. Those who are left to cherish his memory are his loving wife, Patricia Gonzalez, and their 5 children, Liliana, Ava, Joe, Abel, and Evan. Parents Maria and Juan Gonzalez, brothers Abdiel, Juan and Alex Gonzalez. Arrangements have been entrusted to purchase funeral homes in Odessa, Texas. Saturday, October 2nd, 2021, from 4 to 8 p.m., and services will follow at Kingston Avenue Baptist Church on Sunday, October 3rd, 2021, from 5 to 10 p.m. Monday service will be at 10 a.m. and followed by burial at Ector County Cemetery, and Pastor Mike Atkins will be officiating.
Woman dumbfounded by fiancé's intolerance. Dear Abby, for Friday, October 1st. Dear Abby, about a year ago, my fiancé of 6 years revealed that he doesn't think homosexuality is normal or right. I was shocked because he had never mentioned it before, nor did I see any signs that he thought this way. We've gone to pride celebrations, and we both have gay relatives and friends. When we discuss how we will raise our children, it always winds up in an argument. He doesn't want our future children to be influenced by gay people on TV and doesn't want me to encourage it. He did say that after the child turns 18, he would accept what they choose. I would like to teach my children to accept people's true selves. I have tried reasoning with him and using logic as to why there's nothing wrong with gay people and begged him to think about it from their perspective. Nothing I can say changes his mind. He was raised by a very macho father who thinks the same way. What should I do? Do you think a marriage would survive this kind of disagreement? Would therapy help? More accepting in California. Dear More Accepting, be glad your fiancé has been honest with you about this, even if it's 5 years late. One would think that having gay friends and a gay relative would have shown him that sexual orientation isn't something a person chooses. Gay people can no more help being attracted to members of the same sex than straight people can help being attracted to the people of opposite sex. Therapy can be helpful and provide valuable insight to individuals who are willing to admit they need it. I hope your fiancé will consider this. Children come out much earlier today than in years past, and it's important they feel safe doing it. Being forced to wait longer could cause damage that lasts a lifetime. For your sake and theirs, get to the core of what is going on with this man and decide what to do accordingly. Dear Abby, I was divorced 33 years ago. My son was a year old at the time. My ex was doing drugs and had lost his job. He never paid alimony or child support or acknowledged any birthdays or Christmas, so we struggled for many years to buy the necessities. We have grown close to a few of his family members over the last few years. My son is about to be married. My ex is not invited to the ceremony, but he sent a nice amount of money. My son and I are torn about what we should do. I feel my son deserves the money, but it isn't even close to making up for 34 years of neglect. So how do you say thank you for something that's too little and far too late? Mom of the groom. Dear Mom, how to say thank you is not your problem. Your son and his fiancé should deal with this as they wish, including accepting the money. Newlyweds can always use the money.
Common cold versus Delta variant. Dear Dr. Roach, could you explain the difference between the Delta variant and the common cold? How is one to know if an illness is the common cold with cough for weeks or the virus? Anon. Answer. The virus that causes COVID-19, SARS-CoV-2, is a coronavirus that can cause many different symptoms, some of which are similar to the cold. Some people have very mild symptoms that can seem like the cold. The strain that is circulating now, called the Delta variant, seems to have somewhat different symptoms from the previous variants. Cough and loss of taste and smell are reported less frequently, while headache, sore throat, runny nose, and fever are more common. Since these symptoms, except fever, are common in the cold, I would encourage people to get tested even if they have only mild symptoms. This will help slow the pandemic by reducing the number of people an infected person could be exposing. There are many different families of viruses that can cause cold symptoms. This includes rhinoviruses, but also, confusingly, different types of coronaviruses. But only SARS-CoV-2 causes COVID-19. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.